Brothers and sisters, the readings that were just proclaimed are meant to help us enter more deeply into the Lenten season. They provide some context for our prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. In the first reading, we heard the Yahwistic account of the creation and fall of humanity. The Yahwistic author informs us that God, as a free gift, created everything that is. God created the man and the woman. He breathed into them so that they might have life. And furthermore, he provided for his creation. He provided them with every tree that was pleasant and good for food. What we're meant to see is that God not only created humanity, but he also takes care of humanity as well. Sadly, the man and the woman seem to have missed this point. They fell prey to the serpent who deceived them. The serpent tricked them into relying not on God, but on themselves. We see this in the dialogue. The serpent, whom we're told is cunning, approached the man and the woman and said, "Wow, you must be really special. Look what God has given you. He must really love you. I mean, is there anything that God hasn't given to you?" And the woman replies, "No, God's given us everything." So he says, "Well, if he's given you everything, then he must allow you to eat from, see that tree over there." "Well, no, we can't eat from that tree. That'll cause us to die, and God doesn't want us to die." Now, here comes the key moment in this dialogue. This is where we see the cunning of the serpent. "If you eat from that tree, you won't die. No, what will happen is that you will be like God." And herein lies the devil's snare. The devil, the serpent, calls God's love into question. Now recall that love is not an emotion. Love is willing the good of the other. The devil casts doubt upon God's love. He tricks the woman into believing that the command to not eat of the fruit of the tree of knowledge is not a loving command, but a restrictive command. It's a command that comes from a God who isn't seeking the good of the other, but rather is jealous, a God who's trying to prevent people from reaching their full potential. And so the implication is clear, that God is trying to hold us back. He's trying to restrain you. And if you want to achieve your potential, you need to grasp for it. Our society does this all the time. We grasp for things. The reason that we refer to this story that we just heard from the book of Genesis as original sin is that it is the origin of sin. Sin originates when we cease to trust that God is love, when we cease to believe that God is looking out for our best interests, and instead we place our trust in ourselves or in others. We do this all the time. We see it everywhere in our society. We see people questioning, trusting God, questioning whether we should trust external sources such as his church, and instead say that we need to take matters into our own hand. We need to become our own authority. We need to trust in ourselves. If you want to achieve greatness, you have to take matters into your own hand. You have to take the bull by the horns, so to speak. Well, friends, when you take the bull by the horns, what you end up with is a lot of bull. Notice that the atheists and those opposed to organized religion often sound a lot like that serpent, falsely claiming that religion hinders humanity, that it holds us back rather than advances it. They ignore the fact that the Catholic Church has invented and established many of the things that they hold dear, such as the scientific method, universities, and modern healthcare systems. Instead, they claim that religion causes wars and that it oppresses people, ignoring the fact that more people have been oppressed and killed in the name of atheism than any other religion. Failure to believe and to trust in God leads to disaster. We see this in Scripture. After the fall, the man and the woman were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, and chaos entered into creation. Work became toilsome. Giving birth involved labor pains, and the earth became more difficult to subdue. In more recent times, we've seen similar dynamics. A failure to trust in God has led to the rise of tyrannical regimes, such as Stalin's Soviet communism or Hitler's National Socialism. Even in our own country, we've seen this. The removal of God from schools and from the public square has created a more violent society. In short, nothing good comes from a lack of trust in God. Nothing good comes when we trust in ourselves or when we grasp for divinity. Hence, in the gospel, Jesus rejects the temptation to grasp for divinity. Instead, Jesus places his trust in God's love. St. Matthew tells us that after 40 days and 40 nights of fasting in the desert, that Jesus was hungry. I think that's the biggest understatement in all of Scripture. After 40 days of fasting, he wasn't hungry, he was starving. And it's at this moment, when he's starving, that the devil comes to tempt him. If you are the Son of God, change these stones into bread. Jesus, of course, knows that the devil is cunning. And he replies, "One does not live on bread alone, but by every word that comes forth from the mouth of God." Jesus is saying, "I'm not going to grasp, and neither should you. Do not rely on yourselves, but on God to take care of you. Don't grasp, as nothing good will come from it." The devil then becomes even more cunning. In the second temptation, he even quotes sacred scripture as he tempts Jesus to prove his identity. For sacred scripture says that God will send angels to protect him, lest he should dash his foot against a stone. Jesus, of course, isn't fooled for a second by the devil's ingenuity. He responds by saying, "It's not the role of the creature to test God. It's the other way around. It's for God to test his creation." Finally, the devil tempts Jesus into grasping for power and for wealth. Jesus rejects this too, informing the devil that our proper posture is to worship God, not earthly things. God needs to have priority in our lives. Friends, are you beginning to see how these temptations call us into this season of prayer, fasting, and almsgiving? Do you see why we need to keep all three pillars of Lent, not just one of them? By fasting, we reject the temptation to place our trust in ourselves, and we rely on God to meet our needs. We reject the temptation to focus on earthly things, and rather, we place our trust in God, and we receive the gifts that God is attempting to bestow upon us. By almsgiving, we imitate God, who in that first reading was described as the giver. He was the one who gave life. He was the one who gave food. When we place our talents, our time, and our treasure at the service of others, we connect ourselves to God, who is love, to God who wills the good of the other. And finally, our prayer deepens our unity with God. And this, of course, is most evidenced in the Mass. When we come to Mass, we reject the temptation to focus on earthly things. Look around this church. You'll notice there is no view of the outside world anywhere in this church. And that's done for a specific reason. When we come here, we're not meant to focus on the outside world. We're coming here to say our attention should be focused solely on God, who is present to us in the Eucharist. During the Mass, we reject the notion to make God prove himself to us. And we do this when we start every single Mass with a penitential act. In doing so, we're saying it's up for us to examine our own lives and to prove ourselves to God and not the other way around. During the Mass, we reject the temptation to grasp at godliness, as the man and the woman did in the first reading. And instead, we gather and we kneel in the presence of Christ in the Eucharist. In doing so, we don't grasp for divinity, But instead, we receive God, body, blood, soul, and divinity, freely given to us in the sacrament of the Eucharist. In short, the practices of prayer, fasting, and almsgiving are meant to help us to overcome the temptations placed before us by the devil. Brothers and sisters, peace to you and to all who resist the devil through prayer, fasting, and almsgiving.